There is probably no more playful instance of wordplay in all the Torah than the Nechash Nechoshet, the copper snake described in Parshat Chukat. With its string of repeated consonants, it sounds like it could be another of Dr. Seuss's whimsical creations, living in the same strange zoo with the Cat in the Hat, Yertle the Turtle, and the Fox in Socks. Yet the Nechash Nechoshet appears in the midst of a story that is anything but whimsical. In chapter 21 of the Book of Numbers, the children of Israel have once again questioned the decision to leave Egypt. God, once again outraged by their ingratitude, sends a den of deadly snakes to attack. The people ask Moshe to pray on their behalf. He does, and God responds with a strange solution. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Ase lecha saraf, v'sim oto al nes, v'ya kol hanashuch v'ra'a oto v'chai. Then the Eternal said to Moshe, make for yourself a snake and mount it on a pole, and then anyone who is bitten, who looks at it, shall recover. This is a startling command, not least of which because it smacks of idolatry, but it is good news. God has provided a cure. Like the proverbial hair of the dog, the snake will heal the snake bite. But it isn't until Moshe begins to fulfill the order that we get to the actual copper snake. Vayas Moshe nechash nechoshet. Moshe made a copper snake and mounted it on a pole. Vaya im nashach hanachash et ish vihibit el nechash hanachoshet v'chai. And anyone who was bitten by a snake would look at the copper snake and recover. This phrase, nechash nechoshet, is virtually begging for us to notice its linguistic playfulness. There are, of course, the series of shared sounds, the nun, the chet, and the shin. And what's more, nearly the same sounds, slightly jumbled, appear nearby in the word for bite, nashach. So, if a snake bites, im nashach hanachash, you should look at a copper snake, nachash hanachoshet. But if the wordplay itself is glaring, the identity of the wordsmith may require a more careful look. If we look at those two verses once again, we will notice that the copper ingredient in this ritual recipe seems to have been added by Moshe. In the original command, God never specified the material to be used. The instruction was simply to make a snake. Rashi points this out in his commentary on the verse. Lo ne'amar lo lasoto shel nechoshet. He was never told to make it out of copper. But Moshe said, the Holy Blessed One called it a snake, a nechash, so I will make it out of copper. Lashon nofel al lashon, language falling on language. In fact, we can take Rashi's point even further in attributing creative license to Moshe, because in the original command, God actually uses a different word. Ase lecha saraf, make for yourself not a nechash, but a saraf. So, it seems, Moshe chose a different word than the one he heard from God, and then deliberately picked a material that matched its sound. The question is, why? What would compel Moshe to take the initiative, as he constructed the snake statue, to play a little linguistic game on the side? The source Rashi is drawing from, in Bereshit Rabbah, provides an explanation. Rabbi Isi says that there are four places where God asks people to craft an object with the phrasing "Ase lecha," make for yourself. In three of the four, the material is specifically named. An ark of gopher wood, flint knives, and silver trumpets. Only in this case is Moshe told to "Ase lecha saraf," make for yourself a snake, but given no instructions on what material to use. So he reasons that there must be something in the command itself that is hinting at the material. Im ani oseh oto shel zahav, en halashon hazeh nofel al lashon zeh. If I make it of gold, that language does not fall onto that language. Shel kesef, en halashon hazeh nofel al lashon zeh. If I make it of silver, that language does not fall onto that language. Ela hare ani oseoto shel nechoshet, lashon nofel al halashon. Instead, behold, I will make it of copper, for that is language falling on language. The Midrash thus concludes that the Torah must have been given in Hebrew, for only in Hebrew, which uses the same root for copper and snake, would Moshe's linguistic logic hold. If that is true, then the world must also have been created in Hebrew, because there is one other place where we see language falling on language. Very early on, back in the Garden of Eden. The first human has just awoken from a God-induced slumber to find he has a new companion. He is elated, having so far not found his counterpart, his Ezer Kenegdo. Here is the being that will alleviate his sense of aloneness in the world. And he seems right away to know it, declaring, Zot hapam etzem atzamai uvasar mibsari lezot yikare isha kimeish lukhazot. This one at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She will be called woman, isha, for from man, ish, was she taken. The name of this new human, woman, is no mere derivative, for we have not seen the word for man before either. These two terms appear together at once, as if mirroring one another. Rashi's commentary on this verse borrows once again the phrase from the Midrash above, Lezot yikare isha, ki me'ish lukhazot. She will be called woman, for from man was she taken. Lashon nofel al lashon. Mikan shenivra ha'olam b'lashon ha'kodesh. Language falling on language. From here we know that the world was created from the holy language. Once again, language falling on language is meant to describe the selection of two words that sound nearly alike. And once again, the syncing of the two words is being done intentionally, not by God, nor by the nameless narrative voice of the Torah, but by a character in the story of the Torah. So, what is Adam's purpose in letting language fall on language? The rhythm of the verse suggests that he is composing a poem to celebrate the arrival of this new being. And the poem, with its flesh of my flesh, has a distinctly tender, romantic feeling. It is, we might say, the first love song. Indeed, we find in the very next verse the man clinging to his woman. As they become one flesh, the two words seem to have fallen into one another. Back in our scene in the Book of Numbers, Moshe is the one playing the poet. He, too, is using linguistic echoes to create a connection. Here, however, the connection is not between two human beings, but between the divine command and its human implementation. God says to make a snake. Moshe could have just done what he was told, with no embellishment. But instead, he takes the opportunity to construct a copper snake, a nechash nechoshet, as a kind of hidur mitzvah, a way of celebrating the words he has received from God with words of his own that mirror back a response, like a shimmering reflection. He has transformed a duty into a dialogue. There is something romantic about this exchange as well. Sometimes, when we love something, we feel compelled to write poetry, to devote words to the object of our affection. And if those words are especially playful, that too is no surprise, for there is a playful spirit in romance and intimacy. With the one we love, we use pet names, we whisper sweet nothings. As we fall in love, we let language fall on language. Moshe's language is an expression of love for God's language. So, too, we who love the Torah's language have for centuries responded with language of our own, in the form of Midrash, Parshanut, and Piyut. Indeed, our whole tradition of commentary can be seen as a linguistic response to the divine call, a way of clinging to our beloved with words.